This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This program contains themes of an adult nature. Word for Word is an in-depth look into the lives of real people, which means this episode may contain explicit accounts of real-life events, including alcohol and drug use. The language used at times may cause some offence, but has been left uncensored due to the accuracy of the story. No offence is intended, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community stations around the nation, this is Word for Word. Coming to you from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy.
Welcome, family and friends, fans and fiends, to today's edition of Word for Word. I want to thank you for tuning in today. I'm Benjamin Norris, and it's simply a delight to continue to work on this show for the Joy Network, which has already featured some of the community's strongest voices. In the tradition of this ongoing program, I continue to look at powerful stories and insights into the life and lifestyle of some incredible people. Each week we will chat with those in and around our community who have inspired us, entertained us, but mostly they've made an impact on the queer community of Australia. Today's guest is one of them. This woman was born in Sydney, and while you may know her from The Real Housewives of Melbourne, soon you will also know her for her singing. Not ashamed of telling the truth or having a laugh at herself, this woman's infectious nature is intoxicating. Over the years, with her housewife brand, she has also been an inspiring LGBTI ambassador, sharing her story and love of her gay stepson Luke Wolf. This pint star socialite can stand up to Gina Liano, she can cover an Eagles song, and she's also proven that she's got the tenacity and sense of self that will impress even the biggest of skeptics on what a reality TV star can do. I'd like to welcome you, and I'd like to welcome Gamble Bro to Word for Word.
I was kind of cute when I was younger, but I like to dress really extremely out there. My parents split when I was two.
Excluding a girl from an event is a massive statement.
It's hard to say when you're probably a straight woman going to a gay club, so you just feel the joy and the love in the air, and it's much more fun.
Gamble on me, and you're sure to win. I would never deny Gina from my table.
It's now my greatest pleasure to pronounce Rick and Gamble husband and wife.
I regret calling Janet a heroin addict.
Last season on The Real Housewives of Melbourne, glamour and drama went hand in hand.
People often underestimate me. I'm intuitive and I know what's going on. It's a matter of being silly, not stupid.
Welcome. Yeah. You know what's actually quite funny is that when you started the show, you started with Pettifleur, and your names were so unusual that I was like, you made them up. But Gamble's your actual name.
Yep, always been my name. My sister's name's Tempest. It was sort of pulled from Shakespeare, except my father insisted my mother spell it G-A-M-B-L-E, and he was referencing to gamble in her eyes is G-A-M-B-O-L from Shakespeare. But anyway.
Do people interact with you in like a weird way? Because, I mean, you've been on this show, so I could imagine that people come up and try and have like a confrontation or a moment with you because of this program.
I get hugs. Sometimes I get hugs. Especially the first season I did because people had felt very sorry for Gina and they were glad that she sort of had someone on there supporting her. But now it's sort of like you either love or hate me or it's just like dodge me on the street.
How do you get picked to do something like Housewives?
I don't know. They found me on Facebook. I looked in others. I said, Rick, I really want to do this Housewives show, you know. And I thought, it's so strange that I would have thought that they would have approached me as such an egomaniac because they approached everyone. And I looked at my others and there was an email from them asking to get in touch. So that's how it was in there for a long time. And I was really excited. So I said, we're doing the show. I sat down and the boys came on board, thank God.
We're going to get into a whole lot of this as we go on. But I want to talk about you as you're growing up. Are you a Sydney girl originally?
Yeah, I'm from Sydney. And when I say Sydney, all over Sydney. My father built a house in Castle Hill, and when they got divorced, my parents split when I was two, he bought a house in Mossman and started renovating it. And my grandmother on my father's side had a house at Palm Beach on the beach, actually a couple of doors about Naya 81. Lisa Oldfield moved in a few doors down, so she was a childhood friend. And my other grandmother lived in a caravan in Wollongong on an inlet, because when husband died, they went around the Australia in a caravan, and then she ended up living in a caravan. So I feel like I've had every walk of life in my background. So it was good growing up in Sydney, especially with a balanced view of it, I think.
What was your relationship then like with your parents growing up?
I loved my mother, adored her. I absolutely adored her. So very affectionate with my mum. Mm. I was a baby. I was unexpected. Probably, I think, 7 or 8 years younger than my brothers and sisters, which effectively makes you an only child, apparently, psychologically. And my father was really mean to everyone except me, because I just stood up to him.
Yeah, wow.
He was a tough guy. When I went and lived with him, he's like, get out of bed, no one knows you are living. And he helped me get my feet on the ground.
What about your relationship then with your siblings? Like, do you have a good relationship with them?
So I'm the middle five, and I have a younger brother and sister in the wealthy family in Mossman, and they've never missed a meal in their life, and they're wonderful. My little sister became a vet, and my younger brother Angus is my heart and soul. He just gave me faith in life. When he was born, you know, when there's people that are really special,
yeah,
he is just the most beautiful thing, and he lives in LA, and I love him very much.
Can you tell me, what was Gamble like as a child?
Feral, yeah.
And why would you call yourself feral?
Okay, well, Lisa Allsfield's mother summed it up. She said, very excited little girl. Very excited. I think they call it ADD now.
What school did you go to growing up?
I went to Castle Hill Public School, and then I went to Muirfield High School, Baulkham Hills North for a while, the days I did attend.
I can imagine you being quite popular at school.
I have my moments, and I have my moments of being very unpopular as well. I had a bit of a phobia to my school, so I had to change schools for a while. There was a bit of bullying. My mother would keep me home. I had dyslexia when I was younger. Yeah.
Right.
You sort of grow out of it in a way. Once I had a computer in my hands, it was like all over. I was a really happy person. But I think they'd probably call it ADD now.
Did you have any gay friends at school when you were growing up? Like, I can imagine you, for lack of a better word, being like the ultimate fag hag. People are going to kill me for using that slogan. But did you have any gay friends growing up?
I didn't know who was gay or straight. It wasn't really... I had a gay boyfriend. I didn't know he was gay. And kept trying to kiss him. I didn't understand why. He broke the news to me when I was 16. I can't remember what the bar was called outside. I was very shocked, and I actually cried because I just didn't really understand it all.
Why he wouldn't make out with you?
Well, yeah. I'm like, well, I just cried because I was just so embarrassed in a way.
What was your first knowledge that there was gay people?
No idea. Had no idea. None. It didn't matter. Do you know what I mean? And I still don't. I always found it so strange that people felt that they had to come out. It's not like no one's business. But then I do understand it now, because, okay, you're in a relationship, that sort of stuff, and if two people live together that are the same sex, it didn't mean anything to me. I know it sounds weird, but I just didn't know much about it.
Who were some of your idols growing up? Who did you look up to?
Susie Quattro was my music idol. I bought her album because of the cover. I loved ABBA. Of course, Olivia Newton-John, Xanadu album.
There's a photo that I saw earlier today of you almost looking a bit like Marilyn Monroe singing. So when was it that you discovered that you had a bit of a flair for the dramatics?
Well, yeah, my whole life. I mean, I was looking at a photo of my brother and I by the barbecue, and I've got the ballet stance in. They told me I didn't have the body for a ballerina. I think we didn't have the budget for me to go to ballet class.
If you're just tuning in, we're getting the tea from Gamble Bro from The Real Housewives of Melbourne. What were your early ambitions? So when you were younger, what did you think you were going to do?
I wanted to be a singer.
Straight away.
That's all.
I want to be Susie Quattro. I want my name in the neon lights.
Yeah, I want to be on Young Talent Time. I had a very clear career path, even though I was down in Melbourne. I didn't really quite understand that. I went to Johnny Young's talent school for a few years and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
And then, so your singing career sort of hit a bump in the road because of difficulties that you had with your hearing.
Mm.
What happened to your hearing?
Okay, well, when I was just about 18, I think my deal came through when I was 19, but I was singing, songwriting, all that sort of stuff, and I was in the studio recording a song called Girls' World, and I was actually working on the song that I've released now outside of the label, called I Can't Tell You Why, with a friend of mine that was doing sort of his funky version of it. And he said, are you okay? Have you had like an early night? He said, you're going, your pitch is out. because I had perfect pitch, and I'm like, what? And when you can't, if you can't hear, you can't pitch properly. And I couldn't hear the garbage trucks and that sort of thing. So I went to a specialist, and I had the same problem my mother had. It's called scoliosis, and you have to get the bone in your ear replaced with synthetic fiber because it doesn't vibrate strong enough to communicate the sound to the eardrum. So you've got a perfect ear, except your bone's too strong to move with the sound of the ear. And that's why I had the operations. I went back into the industry for 5 minutes. They told me I was too old, like I was 24. And I was like, oh, okay, I felt really bad. So that's why I've come back and I started doing music again, because you can self-publish, you take your own career into your own hands now, and it's very liberating.
You look at people these days and you could be a YouTube singer, and that's how your contract can come up. I mean, you look at Troye Sivan, you know, his career came from YouTube. So, like, you're not being picked up or talent scouted the same way that they used to.
No, you are the big fat man with the scar in the audience. You are that man. You are the record company now. You have to go do a crash course if you want to do anything in like licensing and sync licensing and all that sort of stuff. But you can do it yourself, and that's the way it should be. But you do have to understand that you have to put what you like doing, actually singing and playing music, aside for the time it takes to actually get the thing published properly, and you know, so you don't get taken down if it's a cover and that sort of stuff. So I've actually been on a marathon the last couple of months learning how to do it all. And I just want to start singing again because it's like, oh, geez, you know, yeah, it's hard work.
So what advice would you give Gamble if you could give, like, let's say 12-year-old Gamble walks through the door, what advice would you give it?
Well, what I'm doing now is just tenacity is the spice of life. Don't let anyone tell you can't do something. And I know that sounds sort of like a bit out there. People aren't supposed to say that. But you really, if you put your heart and soul into it, you can do it. And don't let... You know what, people don't want you to move from the position they see you in. So they will kind of squash your dreams. They'll put dampers on it. You have to be authentic in who you are, you know. Mm. You can't pretend to be, you know, I can't pretend to be Kylie, I can't pretend to be Madonna, whatever. But if you have to just be authentic to yourself. So if you feel sort of intimidated, just remember that there's no one like you, and just to push. And women, men, everyone need to keep their tenacity. That's the only reason I'm doing things like I am now, because no one helps you in life. Mm. No one helps you. You have to do it all yourself. If you want to be on a show, you need to make your own bloody show half the time. And this is as simple as that. If you can't just wait for it to happen.
I don't think people realize how much of who they see on television is doing so much more work to be able to get to where they are. And so much of it is kind of fake it till you make it. And then about 15% of it gets shown to the media. It's a very strange industry to be in.
You have to push so hard. Nothing happens by accident. You have to really push hard. This song, okay, my music video has just come out. We put it down. I had to get all the licensing because it's a cover. The work that I had to put into getting that, I had to go over to Perth to work with some musicians because I wanted to work with Jason Singh, but he was recording his own album. And I love Jason. I love working with him. But I was like, you know, okay, we're both vocalists here. I need to go over, and I work with this really heavy metal band called Ragdoll. And they're just such great session musicians. They had a ball, and it was so much fun. And they were so straight. They didn't even have a bottle opener to open my Corona. And then there's long hair, and they're just these banging-looking guys, and they're like, oh, no, we don't have a bottle opener. I'm like, oh, my God, I sent them one in the mail as a joke.
Well, you're famous for bringing gifts to things, aren't you?
I like to. I've got... Well,
you turned up here today.
Well, I've got a collection of stuff that I haven't sold, so I've got plenty
Give it to someone. You know, your story wakes people up in lots of ways, and you've got a lot of people that follow you and love you for who you are. What would you say makes a good reality TV star?
They need... probably five different styles of people, I think. They need, two. They need serious, and they need funny or silly or funny, but not accidentally funny. You know, like they don't know they're funny. Like they're just really just...
Authentically funny.
Well, they're so narcissistic or so serious or whatever that they're just funny in that way. I know that sounds terrible, but that's sort of what they... So you need some light relief, but you can't have all not funny. I don't know. I really don't know what makes a great reality star. If I knew, then I probably wouldn't be on the show because I'd be onto them, you know.
But, like, that's what's kind of interesting. You came into The Real Housewives of Melbourne at season two. Had you watched any of the first season?
So I watched the first season and I loved it. And one of my friends said she was doing it for the next season. I said, you've got to do it. You're going to get caned, but you've got to do it. So when I actually went down and sat with Rick about with the producers before he accepted the role, they said, oh, this, you know, you could be called this or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, there, bring it on. But then they come out with like the tsunami of stuff and you're like, whoa, and you take it a bit seriously. But I'd sort of wanted to, I had this image of how I wanted to present. And you know what? I hate that first season because the first couple of episodes, until I'm really raging mad, you don't seem...
Who you really are.
No. You know, you could... I think they do enough sort of like backs... That they do enough what they call master interviews at home so they actually get you by the end of the season. But, they, you know, they really got all of us the last season. This season was great because everyone's just, you know, thrown down their expectations of being, you know, sort of how you want to be perceived. And I just hate the first couple of episodes.
But it's a hard thing to watch anything. It's like when you listen to yourself or you listen to your own voice or you see yourself on television. It's kind of a jarring experience. I think if you liked it or you loved it, you'd be really narcissistic and it's kind of, it would be unnatural. Do you know what I mean? I'd be more worried if you said to me, oh, bang on, first episode, I loved myself.
I don't know. I mean, I hated it at first, but then, you know, then you realise that it's your turn to start, I don't know, the abused become the abusers, you know. But I, it would have been weird doing Big Brother because watching it all in one big chunk would be weird.
Big Brother's a very strange beast. Very different to Housewives.
Well, no, actually, the executive producer that was originally from Big Brother, who produced it, Carla Washington. You would have been very much connected with the same sort of beast. But that's why I don't have any restrictions on my contract because apart from I don't want anyone slamming my husband, but they do anyway. Because if someone calls you a stripper, pole dancer, sex party holder, whatever. And you're like furious, but then because I was allowed to take that out if I wanted to because it was so slanderous. But then if I'm there and, you know, like in chats and waving my arms around going, I said, you're telling everyone in Melbourne, right? And the pot plant, they cut out the pot plant. I thought the pot plant was funny. But I was so angry. I was so furious at Jen. I thought, how could you do that to another woman? And on TV, because she's like, I haven't told anyone, but you're on TV, you know. And I'm like, oh, my God, like all of that mud, something's going to stick, right? I was so angry. But then I realised if we cut it, no one would understand why I hated Janet so much.
Yeah, exactly.
So I said, just go with it. Now just go with whatever they say. I mean, Venus said I was having sex with someone a week before I got married. She said that to me on camera, but we were filming a week before I got married. And I'm like, yeah, but people still think it may have happened. Do you know what I mean? And unfortunately, they do. They do think it still happened. So I decided to get rid of all of those stripper rumors by posing nude for my album cover.
But like, you know, you've accused me of being a stripper, and now I am one.
Just kidding. I thought, oh, that'll put the stripper rumors to rest. I'll probably cop it on the show. Well, actually, our executive producer is a bit of a feminist, so I'll probably be in trouble from her as well.
She'll be like, why have you done this?
Yeah, why?
Do you know what, though, like, with the producers, how do they try and get things out of you? Do they ever try, like, you know, it's hard to sort of explain. When I would be in the diary room talking about Big Brother, they would often talk to me and not the producers, they would still be Big Brother, but they would conjure things out of me. And then when I watched the show back, I was like, hang on a sec, that's kind of out of context. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Out of context is a good one. That's why you're better off to just go in more, like just to let it roll, you know, that sort of thing. Because when Venus came on, the producers said, look, Venus said she was going to blow this whole story up about me supposedly meeting my husband on sugardaddy.com. And I'm like, there's a paper trail. I met him on eHarmony, right? But she said, but now she doesn't want to do that story anymore. She doesn't want to talk about it. And I said, well, I'll talk about it. I'll talk about it. I'd love to talk about it with Venus. And that was so funny. And you don't hear half of the stuff that came out of her mouth at Janet's. And unfortunately, the funniest thing last season was that Gina called Janet a gold digger, right? It was so funny. But Janet's new husband didn't really like it very much. And I just thought, oh, it's so funny. It'd be like, sucked in, Janet. You got caught one too, right? But it got, you know, like, unfortunately, you cannot sign your rights away. So you know, that you do have the right to sort of have things cut out of the show if you want, but I just tend to
just let it go.
Yeah.
But I think that worked in your favor, because as I watched the show with you, I found that as a viewer, I liked you more and more as it went on. But that's because I think you became more comfortable. You were like, well, you can say whatever you like. It's not true. So, you know, you can drown in your own rumor mill, you know.
Well, Venus said, oh, people call you a whore. And I said, that's dirty whore to you. They didn't hear it. See, I mean, if you go home.
The reason why.
If you go home and I'm going to go, that dirty whore. You know, but I mean, I don't know what to say about it.
Do you?
I wanted to be evil this year. I was in, this last season, I was just in an evil mood. I was angry at Gina.
You went on a real roller coaster, I guess, with that friendship with Gina Liano, because as soon as you turned up, you were Gina's friend. And, well, you made friends with her very well.
I was a sycophant. I was enamored. I hate myself for it. And just looked so stupid. And, it was a bit weird. It was a bit embarrassing to watch back.
Because you were like, I'm coming across like I'm a fan.
Oh, it was. I was just like revolting.
But you know what? I do that though sometimes. I think it's human nature. If you have established a relationship with someone without meeting them, sometimes you can go and just pick up the storyline yourself. So you're like, Gina Liano, oh my God, I love you. And then that's just you being you.
Well, some friends of mine were friends with Janet, and she said, do you want to have lunch before you start filming? I said, no, I don't want to know anyone. I want to get to know everyone on camera, because otherwise they don't understand, people won't be able to understand the story, you know, how we met each other. I didn't want to have any alliances, and most certainly not with Janet first, because I thought she'd been quite mean. And it ends up Janet's my best friend out of everyone, really. Her birthday's this weekend, have a lovely time. But in the beginning, she wasn't. And I just went, oh, no, I'm definitely going to make sure that it's more balanced. You know, that's why I want to be here. I don't want it all being sort of one-sided. So I did actually like Gina from watching her. And I liked her when I got to know her. And she was like, she's sort of like a bit like my husband. So when we're traveling, it was quite fun. She was quite stable and, you know, settled and all that sort of stuff. And she really helped me with Janet because I was devastated. So she spent a lot of time counselling me on the phone. And I found she was a really good friend in that way, because I was really upset. I thought we wouldn't be able to see our stepchildren and all that sort of thing if these sort of rumours start. And she helped me talk through that. She said, even if you were a prostitute or a pole dancer, you could still see your children. I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know.
People who are strippers and pole dancers, they still have children.
They feed their children, yes. But I was just like, oh, okay, yeah. But no, I mean, look, I still consider her a friend. It's just the problem is she was being so mean to Sally.
That last season.
Yeah, that I couldn't do that to Sally. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't sort of align with Gina because she was being too mean. I don't know why she was. Gina's mother, her father had just died and she was in a strange mood. But I felt like she sort of had wanted to get me fired or something because she didn't invite me to the first group event. And if you've got no friends on the show, you really don't have a show, you know, like you're not part of it. And Jackie and Janet took me in, so it was good.
So you were like, oh, great, I've got a storyline. How much of this is true, though? People are saying that Gina doesn't want to come back and do another series.
I don't know.
Is that like a contract negotiation?
I don't know. I don't know what she wants to do now. She may be over it. I don't know. I think that now I've had my I've done my contract. There's a place where you feel like you've filled it. You know what I mean? If I'd been fired, I would have had a hole in my sort of I would have felt really like I hadn't completed.
But you fulfilled the 3-year deal.
Yeah, and so if you haven't been fired at that stage, you're sort of like, okay, well, I've done that. What's next? But yes, I mean, I don't know.
I know there's going to be a lot of queer people that love this show. They're going to get very upset when they hear this. But Gamble, have they cancelled The Real Housewives of Melbourne?
Well, I've heard that Foxtel are putting their money into sport and news now, and I'm not sure if we're going to come back. But TV is a different world now. You've got Netflix, you've got all these different options. But Foxtel are great. They're fantastic for news. They're fantastic for sports. They're fantastic for, you know, your favourite things that you want to watch. How their budget is going to do Housewives, I don't know, you know.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Gamble Bro from The Real Housewives of Melbourne, and we are getting the tea. I'll tell you what. I still to this day think some of the most awkward television I've ever seen is Petty Floor. Like, as much as I loved her, I was like, she was nuts.
Yeah, but that, unfortunately, that's
just who she is.
Oh, but, you know, you're trying to be nice to her. Like, she's trying to be nice to her, and then she'll come out with some really mean things, and you're just like, oh, too hard. But, yeah, she was upset after the I'm like, "Petit feu, just get up and do the group shot. Get up." And I'm dragging into it. And she's like, I'm having this massive tantrum. I'm like, "Just don't let them beat you. Just get up and do the bloody group photo." And so her and I end up friends over that. She didn't do this photo, but she said, "Oh, you're the only one who tried to help me do that photo." But yeah, she's actually really kind of cool now. I see her out and she's so cool and relaxed now. I wish she'd been like that when we'd been filming, because she was just so painful when we were filming.
They'll come back in a couple of years' time and they'll reboot it. And they'll be like, "We're bringing back the Real Housewives of Melbourne," and they'll probably dig her out and make her be on that. And she'll play a different person altogether.
Well, if she's like she is now, when I've seen her out, she'd be great. But if she was like she was before, it'd just be the same thing. Petit Fleur has been annoying. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have that. It's not interesting. You know, she makes me laugh, though. It's a shame. Shame we weren't mates the first season. Oh, she's relaxed a bit now. Oh, yeah. She's getting divorced or something, isn't she?
Oh, well, that's what's in the paper. And then, like, that means that beautiful house she's in. Mm. I wonder whether or not she'll stay there with...
Oh, look, I think Frank would have her stitched up. He's not stupid, old Frank. I wouldn't be divorcing Frank if I was Petit Fleur. He's
like,
too patient. But I think Petit Fleur needs to have someone to, I guess, to socialise with. She's still right out there like a 20-year-old, and she's great fun.
But she needs a Rick Wolf in her life.
Yeah, no, she wouldn't be able to handle... She wouldn't be able to have Wolfie. Wolfie's too straight. You know, she needs someone to go out and clubbing with. She probably needs someone 20 years younger than her.
Okay, just really quickly. Murder, marry, kiss. Janet, Lydia, Jackie.
Okay, so kiss Janet.
Yeah.
Oh, no, marry Janet. kiss Lydia and what's the other one? Oh, no, I don't want to kiss... Hang on.
You have to kill someone.
Well, okay, I'll kill Lydia because, you know... I don't know how Jackie would go kissing her. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe, yeah, that would be better. Marry Janet, kiss Jackie, murder Lydia. But I don't want to murder Lydia.
You know, it's not actual murder. It's just a game. Okay, so the only last question I'm asking about this Housewives before we talk about your music. So when it comes to this accusation from Gina about wog bitch, that's all we want to know. Did Gina hear Sally say she's a wog bitch?
I have no idea. I don't think so. I honestly, you know, the problem is if someone says things in that many times, you start to wonder if they did. But I know that Gina threw so many, like, insults at Sally. Like, I heard the tsunami, like, they were very sort of, you know, the names, the racist names that I don't fully understand. I didn't know what half of them meant when I was younger because they're just a bit stupid, really. But she threw a whole lot of sort of things that I don't even really know what they're called, like white sort of, at Sally, which I thought was stupid because it's like watching two Australian women calling each other different. They seemed like the same race to me. Do you know what I mean? It just seemed a bit strange. But I do know that Gina certainly hit Sally with a tsunami of insults. So to me, it sounded like a retort, but if I could imagine it ever happening, but no, Sally does not walk around calling people, you know, racist names. But no, I didn't hear it. I didn't see it happen. And no, I don't think it happened. But I'm at the same time, it's been said so many times, I question myself.
The other thing I was going to say was when it came to the Housewives of Sydney, did you end up watching that and realising, did you watch that and think, God, this is a lot of rubbish? Because I watched it and was like, what a lot of rubbish.
No, they captured Sydney perfectly. Lizzie Buttrose used to bully me. She went out with my ex.
Get out.
She used to bully me and I could never explain it to anyone and they captured her perfectly on camera. I'm like, I told Kylie Washington, I said, you captured Sydney perfectly. That's exactly what it's like. And that's why I moved to Melbourne, because women here support each other to, you know, we do.
Yeah.
And
but the Housewives in Melbourne was very wholesome and you could see that there were real people. With the one in Sydney, I was like, these women are crazy 24 hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
There was nothing endearing about it. You were just like, girls, you need to drink less. And say less and have some quiet time at the gym.
No, that's what Sydney's like. You know, they probably have late nights as well. You know, it's a bit more sort of like LA and Sydney.
Now, you got to include your relationship with Rick with Housewives, which I thought was great because we got to see you before you got married and then we got to see you get married on the show. So people got to follow this relationship. Was it nice to have him there to come home to?
Oh, my God, he's amazing. He's away at the moment. I feel so, I miss him terribly. But, yeah, no, he is so grounding because I was devastated the first 6 months of it, first 4 months I was doing it. And then when it went to air and, you know, the magazines had sort of picked up his stories and I was really very upset. But he was just like, don't worry about it. Don't get upset. You know, just let it roll off your back. It doesn't matter. And I couldn't have done the show with any other man.
Because, like, how different is he to previous relationships you'd had? Is he very different?
What I did when I was actually dating Rick, and then I moved to Sydney for 2 years, and I kept writing out what I wanted in a man. I thought, no. And I actually changed my swagger as well. The way, you know, sometimes when you think, oh, I want someone will love me the way I am. No, they won't. If you know, if you're getting the same repetitive behaviour, going out with men that are no good to you, then sometimes you have to look at what sort of vibration you're sort of like putting out there. And it wasn't until I was completely independent, had a good job, I was settled in Sydney, and I kept running, oh my God, this is Rick, you know. And he had started seeing someone, and I let him know, I said, look, I've been asked out by somebody at the gallery, and I, you know, and he got very upset by that. And one Saturday, I got a text message, and someone had told me, oh, I should move on. And I said, no, I'm not moving on. And I just said, Rick, I think we're both in the wrong place. And he agreed, and that's how we got back together.
So you moved back to Melbourne for him?
Yeah, that's it.
How long were you back together and living in Melbourne with him before you started doing The Housewives?
It was straight away, pretty much. I just got I got Rick out of the apartment he was living in, screaming like he did not want to leave into that nice house because it was better for everyone. And
the look and feel of the show.
Well, no. I got it before the, we got into the house. We settled down. I looked in others, and there was the show. It's sort of like I did want to do the show.
Yeah. Then you got to have this relationship with Luke, which is Rick's son. So this is your stepson now. This is a great relationship. I mean, did you click with him straight away?
No. He didn't like me, and I didn't like him much either, really. But what happened when I made this decision about Rick, Luke's lost his mother, and I came down for that, and I thought, I'm going to pull this family together. That's why we moved house, and we settled, because I thought, no, I want... it's time to pull this together. Rick and I were both being very immature, and it was really nice. But no, I mean, I actually adore Luke, but he didn't like me very much at the beginning. But we didn't like each other. Like, people say, oh, you didn't like your stepmother. Well, stepmothers are allowed not to like you that much either. Mm. Yeah, I could see that he was going to be a fantastic adult, but he had a lot of... I kept hearing about the ex-stepmother and all, and it's just been going on. But now, he was a dream come true in other ways, because I could understand... We spoke the same language, and he came out to us. I'm like, oh, no, honey, you know what I mean? Like,
did you already know that he was gay before he told you?
Yeah.
How did you know that? Just from working
out? Well, it's pretty. He had more makeup than Elizabeth Taylor. But he's grown out of that phase, which is fine. I mean, if he's dating it as well, he wanted to be a makeup artist. But yeah, no, he's always been a lovely kid. He's just divine, but he's just turned into such a great adult. I'm so excited. It's so nice now.
When it came to him telling you, how did he tell you? Did he tell you and Rick together?
Yeah, he sat us down, and we were at the place at Marfa Cove. I had a little apartment there, and I had a place in South Yarra. And I was there one weekend, and he sat down and he said, I've got something to tell you. And Rick was like, that's okay, son. And then I just sat with Rick afterwards for a while. He said, oh, but, you know, I hope he's going to have – I'm worried that – he felt sad that he wasn't going to have children and that sort of thing. But obviously the sky's the limit these days.
I mean, it's the first thing people think about is, oh, it was common to say, oh, it's such a lonely life because you can't then have a family.
Yeah, but Luke's so straight, you know, in a strange way. And, like, he went through a really rough period, but he didn't start drinking. He actually healed, and then now he's out in the world. So he has actually got what it takes to be in a stable, settled, good relationship. I didn't mean straight, but like, I mean, he's just actually relationship material, as opposed to you kind of think, oh, everyone's out partying and, you know, like in like lycra pants every night, you know, when you're in the 80s. So that's what you sort of think of, but, you know, but no, he's definitely going to be a good partner to someone.
Do you think he's going to get married?
Yeah, I think so.
Are you going to be the bridezilla though? Do you reckon you'll be the... stepmother.
I'm staying out of that one. I've already screwed up his 21st and his father's wedding. That became a fiasco. I mean, his family, their family was moved to the back of the seating because and they left the dinner halfway through. It was a bit of a nightmare. But anyway, yeah, no, I'll let him have his wedding.
So you've been out to some of the gay clubs with Luke.
Yeah.
With Rick. The three of you.
Yeah.
It's a family event, going to the Greyhound or going out to Melbourne's nightlife, being to the Mardi Gras. Yeah. What did you think of the gay scene?
Yeah, it's the same, pretty much. People dress better than they used to when I was on it. They should. It's nothing strange. It's nothing strange. It feels like you're just going, the music doesn't seem to have changed much either. It's always fun and electric and, yeah.
Well, it's a good segue because we want to talk about your music career. And it's quite interesting because, like, coming off the fourth season of The Real Housewives of Melbourne, we originally saw a glimpse of you dabbling with music because you wanted to show Rick that you'd learn how to sing again. Mm. And that was a part of your storyline.
So I wrote a song for Rick. It's called Are You Good For Me? So it's like this caning. It starts off as a cane, like, you know, I don't know about, you know, the normal arguments we have in life, but then even so, I know you're good for me, right? I wrote it to a blues track anyway. And then I'd met Jason at our Christmas party. And
Jason's the singer who's on Taxi Ride and lots of things, yeah.
So he's sort of like, I guess, rock and roll royalty in Melbourne. He had his manager there with him and we sort of like got together and I said, look, I don't have any scandal in my life, and that's the one thing that our family don't have. But if I'm sneaking off to go and do this song, then I'll look, you know, then. But the producers don't let you make up a scandal.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd give me a bit of scandal. But what happened was I gave them some tsunami of ideas of what I wanted to do. And Natalie, who used to be my talent manager, is now one of the producers. And she said, what's this? And it said, singing song, right? And I said, oh, look, I really wanted to record a song and sing it to my husband. And she said, well, why don't we do it for your anniversary? And I'm like, yes, okay, so fantastic. So that's how that all went. And that's my favourite thing that I've ever done on the show. It was so real and it was so much fun and it really was amazing just to get that out of my system.
Well, it was an emotional moment. And when I remember watching it for myself, you know, we'd seen you go through so much on that show, but as soon as when that curtain lifted and we saw Rick sitting there, and we could hear you singing, and you were genuinely talented. I think everyone felt a culmination of relief and excitement for you, but I felt really emotional. Like, I felt quite teary.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, it was, I had to learn how to sing again. I did spend, a year. I'm still learning how to sing again. Do you know what I mean?
How hard is it to learn how to sing again when you have those hearing difficulties?
Well, no, the thing was I had my hearing fixed when I was 24, so I was still singing, but the confidence is gone. So I was just singing to myself. But you need another set of ears to, and also you need to do your breathing, all that sort of thing. So I didn't want, they would have embraced an epic fail. I've got to tell you, if I failed that badly, they would have loved it. They would have loved it because they'll embrace your fails and they'll embrace your wins. But every now and then it's nice to get a win. And I thought, no, they're not going to get a fail out of this. I mean, there's some things that, you know, like, you know, whatever. But I thought, no, this one I actually want to win, you know, something. So it was good.
It's a daunting thing, though, because I've seen some of the housewives in other formats around the world and it didn't work out as well for them. Like, their singing was god-awful as far as I'm concerned.
But this is part of who I am. It's something I've always loved doing. And
you weren't just grabbing at something going, oh, look, I'm going to cash in. You just genuinely had the ambition and the passion from growing up.
Well, yeah, the courage of doing the show, it's like I'm not getting in my own way anymore. You know what I mean? I'm not going to let that happen. It's just like, just push for it because someone will always take your place in the success sort of like ladder if you fear stops people doing so much. And, you know, there's fear of doing the show. I mean, some people go, oh, you're scared of exposing yourself. But you know what I mean? But you've got that spot.
You've just got to do it.
You've got to do it.
You've got to share your stories, which I think is always, you know, that's your currency in life. Share your stories with people and it resonates people to you. And your story to share with people, Gamble, is that, you know, you have a passion for music and you have an ability. So why wouldn't you sing and why wouldn't you talk about it?
Well, yeah, and also what I love about the new music industry now is it's because it's obviously something that I love doing, is that it actually takes all those elements of my ADD, sort of the personality, because I get to be the producer, I get to, you know, be the singer, I get to, you know, have my practice time, I get to sort of try and put press releases together and all that sort of stuff and shoot the music video and all that sort of stuff. So all of those different hats you have to wear to do anything to be an independent artist suit that down to the ground.
For people who are out there who might not have heard Gamble singing, they might not have seen Housewives, this is Gamble Bro with This Time.
Maybe I can get things right. Maybe I should fight the fear middle of the night. Hoping I can find the answers. Hoping I can find my way. Cause this time I don't wanna run. You never let me lose my way. You make me wanna take a chance on you every day. Hoping I can find the answers. Hoping I can find my way. 'Cause this time I don't wanna run. I believe it, I can see it. So close and yet so far. I can feel it when I'm dreaming. You got me wishing on a shooting star. 'Cause this time, this time, you stop me from falling. You brought me back to life. Take a look at me, I can't believe I'm finally falling for you. And never letting go. You're the best to me, my destiny, and now I'm calling to you. To you. I believe it, I can see it, so close to you.
What relationship do you think Australia has with tall poppy syndrome? Do you think that, you know, people are going to embrace this singing gamble? Or do you think they're going to get on board with this?
Oh, look, it's none of anyone's business. If they don't like it, they can abuse me on Facebook or Instagram. It's fine. But I'm doing it for me. It's something that makes me feel happy. It's like my painting. No one's going to buy my painting, but I'm still doing it. It's therapy.
Do you know who I like who's a singer from One of the Housewives? I love that Erica Jane.
Yeah, she was my inspiration.
She's great.
Someone said, why are you doing it this age? She said, I haven't given up on life. I thought, oh, that's my motto. She's actually my inspiration for doing this in the first place.
Have you ever spoken to Erica Jane?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't. I actually...
Have you tried to add her on Facebook and be like, be my friend?
No, I added her on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
And no. I mean, they're another world, the girls from the States. I mean, they have millions of followers and it's quite a different thing. When I went over to LA... This blogger had said, you know, I want to interview you, but you can only have five of your entourage and it has to be for 45 minutes. I'm like, oh, I'll be at the Ivy for 45 minutes or to an hour having lunch if you want to join me. He came, but I bought him a lobster. And I said, okay, I've got to go. He said, oh, I'm actually having a nice time. I'm like, oh, okay, but you only have 45 minutes. Anyway, it's the best lobster I ever bought because he ranked me in the top 10 favorite housewives.
And
lobster paid off, man. But yeah, no, there's some lovely people, but they actually expect us to be all mean and horrible. But
they probably don't understand, but
because
you know, like,
we're small fish compared to the. They didn't want to talk to us when we were in Dubai. They
weren't exactly. Were you all there at the same time?
Yeah, we were all there at the same time, and you know, Janet was so funny. We were going out to have something to eat, and her and I were in a good place, and we were with Jackie, and Janet just walked over the mound into their set. I was like, hi, and then they basically said, bugger off. And Gina said hello to Lisa in the foyer, and it wasn't as friendly as one would think. I mean, it was okay. And Jackie was sitting there on her phone and said, oh, someone's called us stalkers. And so I thought, or I don't know. So I ended up with this stupid story on radio saying, oh, they called us stalkers, and it's my fault. But no, I don't know. They weren't that excited to meet us. And we're there at the same time. We're going, oh, no, we're all going to be riding camels. And, you know, it just was weird.
Do you watch that? Do you watch The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills?
I've stopped watching any Housewives because I don't want to. You know, when you're speaking naturally, you may start thinking, oh, someone has said that before or whatever. You may have seen it on the show. And I don't want to be picking up anything that I may reuse because sometimes, you know, you put dialogue in from something you've heard. You thought, oh, that's clever. You sometimes use it in, you know, your daily life or advice or something. I just don't watch it because if I do the show again, I don't want to have it sort of like in my head.
You've got to be really careful when you're watching stuff and then you are on television.
Yeah, because you, it becomes part of your behaviour.
Yeah, you're like,
especially when you're under that pressure, like, you know.
You're like, well, I've got to live up to expectations and maybe it's socially acceptable to throw a glass of water or call someone a certain name, you know. But it's probably not inherently what you would do normally, you know. It's not organic.
I threw a glass of water on my ex.
Did you?
Yeah.
What did he do to deserve that?
Oh, he deserved it. I can't remember at the time, but he was lying on the floor saying something obnoxious. He was drunk as a skunk, and I threw a glass of water on him.
That was the moment when you realised, you're like, I'd be a really good housewife. This is the moment for me. Mm. With this album, what's the album called?
Okay, so it's a single called, it's called I Can't Tell You Why. It's a cover of an Eagles classic. And, yeah, so I'm just releasing one song at a time. I'll go back over to Perth. We've recorded a few. There's an event coming up in November that I can't talk about yet, and I'm going to sing the next one live. But I've got a couple in the can ready to go. But we're putting together an album slowly. So I just going by a single. It's easier for me to do that. You know what I mean? I can do the clip. I can do this. It's done. So eventually, hopefully, we'll put them all together on an album, but I think you'll just be getting one or two from me at a time.
While we're talking about this new CD, obviously, we'd love to play this now so people can hear it. I Can't Tell You Why by Gamble. This is your song.
Yeah.
an amazing song.
It's beautiful. It's amazing, yeah.
Had you had like a love affair with that song for a long time?
Well, I was going to record it. That's when I was told I was too old. When I was 24, I'm getting confused now. I mean, I must be going crazy. But yeah, no, actually.
When you lost your hearing when you were younger.
Yeah, no, I must have been, I was recording Girls for it when I realised that. But yeah, no, I was going to do it when I was younger, somewhere in the mishmash of my bender of a youth. Sorry, a bit of a phasey sort of period of my time. But yeah, no, and so I felt like it really had to be told in a female voice as much as a man's voice. Do you know what I mean? It sounds like a woman trying to rationalise their behaviour the night before. And I'm sorry to Mr. Timothy, but you know what I mean? It actually resonates as a man saying, you know, we really don't have to be this crazy. And also from sometimes, I don't know, and I'm not trying to be sexist or whatever, but for me personally, I bring out the crazy all the time. I have to keep it like sort of like buried really deep down because women get bored and they just start a fight just because they're bored.
It's very common. What is next? Apart from this album coming out, which is keeping you super busy, would you do Dancing with the Stars is coming back?
I'm going to do Dancing with the Stars. Oh my God. Okay. Who is writing that?
Who do we call?
Yeah, no, that would be so much fun.
What about Celebrity Get Me Out of Here? They've just announced today that it's coming back.
I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here, haven't been asked.
How did Jackie get onto that?
Oh, because she's funny. She's actually really, you know what? Her and I have never got on that well. And she came, one of my friends died in a helicopter crash.
Yeah.
And she was really generous. She has a generosity of nature. And she did a reading for me and she comes from a good place. She's a really, really lovely girl. She's actually really lovely, and I'd never seen that side of her before because I always used to sort of poke fun at what she was doing. But what she does do, it comes from the right place. And it's, I don't, I, and the reading was pretty spot on, but the thing was where it came from was really so beautiful, I thought.
So have you got a message for the queer community that are out there listening to this amazing chat with Gamble Bro?
Okay, well, you can self-publish if you're a musician. Take that on board, guys, and, you know, just no one really does anything for you. You've got to make it happen for yourself. And I know that there'll be some weddings coming up. Just make sure you do it within budget, be cheap, and you don't have to always have your wedding on a Sunday afternoon. Or if you're extravagant, go for it. But I don't know. I think that sometimes putting your money towards a house, it's hard enough for people who are young to buy property. You know, just be sensible and make sure you marry someone you love. Don't have a statement marriage. You know, life is a long time and you really need to be with your soulmate. And, you know, there's things you need to know before you get married. Are you a night owl and your partner likes to get up early? Do they smoke? You know, I just learned later in life just it's better to go out with somebody who's grounded. And, you know, it's hard enough to have. An argument's fine, but you can't argue with a drug or alcohol or that sort
of thing. No, you've got to be right.
I'm a nightmare if I'm drunk and I'm have something. I'm like, oh, it's not good.
But I think it's a good message to say to people, though, is to find someone who you genuinely connect with and fit with. And yes, it's great that we can get married, but, you know, spend a little bit of time making sure it's the right person.
Yeah, and if someone's off the moral compass, like, you know, like, for instance, if they're not paying a tradesman after they've worked or if they, you know, they've got a bad vibe about them, you need to read those signs, no matter how in lust or love you are, because, you know, life's a long time, like I say.
Well, Gamble, thank you so much for joining us on Word for Word.
You're amazing. Thank you so much. You're the gorgeous thing. Going back home to Google everything now.
Word for Word is presented and produced by Ben Norris from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy. Word for Word is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations across the community radio network.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.